Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 283, recorded on January 1st, 2016. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. I am Michael Johnston, and with me is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, and hey, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. It's the first.
Ooh, it's 2016.
Yeah. This is my first podcast of 2016, seriously.
Awesome, me too. I only do one podcast, though, so it's easy for me to do that. And Adam Christensen is also here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey. I'm not doing so great.
That's okay.
I got this winter cold thing, and it's kicking my butt. But I'm on the other side of it, so we should be okay.
That's good. Did you take zinc?
No, I take vitamin C.
I hear the only way to get around a cold, if there is a way, is with zinc. So I always take
like this mega dose zinc.
Not necessarily mega dose. So if you get the what the heck, it's like a rapid melt Zicam.
Oh yeah,
you get the Zicam, and they don't say, you know, just pound it. They say take. I get the melt in your mouth tablets, and you let it dissolve, and then you can't drink anything for 15 minutes for some reason, and then. I think you can take them every 4 hours if you want until...
I thought those were like a take before you, like when you first think you're going to get a cold,
Yeah. That's
it's like
what
a preventative.
Are. Yeah. So okay. when you start feeling that little...
So not a cure.
That tickle in your throat.
Right. You want to take it right then. So it's too late for me.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying for next time. That's what I do.
Okay.
And I feel like I've twice gone through that this year already, and I've gotten...
I've avoided it,
yeah, somehow.
Yeah. I can usually, and I didn't do it this time, so half of it's my own fault. If I start just like pounding the vitamin C, I can usually stay away from it.
But that's good.
I didn't do any of my preventative stuff this time around, and it paid for it.
Yeah, well, it's uphill from now.
By the way, don't take any medical advice from any of us. Just, I want to throw that out there now that we've said
that. No, but if you want to play doctor, call me.
Just do not listen to anything we say about medical information. We are not the people to listen to.
I guess it was more fun the other way, but okay.
Still, I like my house. That's all.
I'm not a doctor. I think that's all you have to say. Okay, let's talk about iPhone stuff. So AT&T has decided to stop offering 2-year phone contracts starting January 8th. And so for new and existing customers, so if you want to be a new customer at AT&T and you want a contract, you better get it before the 8th.
And will they let people who already have a contract continue to get contracts?
No. More renewals.
Ooh, there's going to be people that are pissed.
Yeah.
Of course there are. But yeah, the FAQ, the internal FAQ that they have for AT&T staff says no renewals for 2-year contracts.
Yeah.
There might be a lot of people jump. Is Verizon still going to allow contracts?
So far.
Yeah. Verizon might get many new customers.
Yeah. Maybe.
Believe me, I've heard from when Apple did their whole payment plan thing, and we went over this last time on my show, the payment plans. I heard very vocally from a large number of people who were like, they can take my contract when they pry it out of my cold, dead hands. I've always hated contracts, so I think it's a good thing, but I understand. Some people really like them.
Yeah, I get it, but excuse me. I'm glad I don't have the whole contract thing anymore. I'm not paying extra for my phone anymore.
Yeah.
It's convenient for some people, though, to get a contract. In certain circumstances, you know, if you want a free phone and you just want to pay,
you're not getting a free phone.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's never free. You're just shifting money around. So it just depends. A lot of people like the idea of having the payments deferred out much, you know, over a much longer period of time. So, I mean, but you could still opt for, don't they do like a 30 some odd month next plan now or something like that?
Yeah, you can get a crazy long one.
Yep. Yeah, so how do you know what the plans are for like bring your own device kind of thing?
For AT&T?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm trying to figure this out now.
I don't.
Continue, AT&T. Too many questions. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll be here all day if you try and figure out going through their website.
Yeah,
I think I would think you just end up with like a non-contract, you know, like standard plan.
It looks like $20 a month, but that seems too good to be true. But no. I don't know what that's getting me. It's I have no idea.
A standard, you know, you'd buy a standard AT&T mobile plan, you just wouldn't have a contract.
Yeah.
Because again, without contracts now, you know, you wouldn't be on the next thing. So you wouldn't be making the phone part of the payment. So it'd be exactly the same, less the phone part of the payment.
Yeah. So I guess ultimately the question is, will people...
Which is about $30 usually, I think, on the average next plan, is you end up paying the contract rate. Well, not the
base rate.
No. The base rate plus, you know...
Plus your data.
$30 to $40 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For the phone part, right? On the AT&T next plan, you're making 18 or 24 payments at around $30 to $40 a month for just the phone, and then the rest is your services.
Right. And once you pay off the phone,
then that part goes away.
Right.
And that's the problem with the contract plans, is that part never goes away. So it's built into the contract. So if you don't upgrade every 2 years, then you're really getting hosed.
Yeah, right. So are the people who are getting out of their contracts, who are, I don't know, defaulting or the contracts are going away, will they be, I assume, they'll be moved to something that is more economical?
They'll be moved to a next plan.
Yeah, everything's AT&T next.
Okay.
So it's just a different way of paying. I mean, you're still paying for the phone, it's just you're paying for it in a different way.
So, I mean...
I think in a more transparent way.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like it's more transparent, but the question is, if AT&T is forcing this upon people, are they doing it just because they want to simplify things for everybody involved, or are they making some more money this way?
I don't know how they would be making more money this way. I think it's pretty much they'd be actually maybe even making less money.
Well, it's possible that they may be able to advertise their services in a way that seemed like it was a better deal until you realize you also have to pay for a phone. Right.
And that's kind of... You were always paying for the phone anyway. It's the thing. It was
right
hidden before.
Right.
It's
so it was
now obvious that, oh, this thing on my bill is the $40 for the phone that I...
Yeah, but what I'm saying is now it's instead of you having to have the cost of the phone built into the monthly payment, now the monthly payment is removed from that. And then so they can just say plan starting from $30. And then at some point you realize you have to also have a phone to go with that.
You got it.
Yeah. So that may be they've probably crunched the numbers and realized that they're going to get more customers with that. And it makes life for everybody else simpler, I'm sure.
Well, and I think, like you said, another thing that's happening is a lot of people, because there's so many phones in the marketplace, and you've got early adopters like us, a lot of people pass them down within families and stuff like that. And so you don't even want to buy a contract or anything. You just want to bring your own device.
Right.
So it's much clearer in this scenario, too, right? It's like, here's the price of the plan. If you're going to get a phone with it, here's the price of the phone. You add that on to the price of the plan, and here's your total cost. If you're bringing a phone with you, then we just don't charge you this part of it.
Yeah, which is very nice.
Right. And it wasn't like that before. You had to sign up for a contract even if you brought your own phone.
Right. So you're paying for a phone.
Totally posed.
Yeah.
Because you're
paying for a phone without a phone.
Yeah. Basically. You know, which is how it worked when the original iPhone came out. We had to pay full price for a phone, and then we paid for a phone contract.
It was only $30, wasn't it? Oh, no, it was $30 for the data plus the voice. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
whatever your paying, voice plan in, you know, was minutes.
Yeah, and you were paying the same price that anyone else buying a phone from AT&T was paying, which means you're paying the price that had a baked-in cost for a phone.
Subsidy, yeah.
Yeah, so you were paying double for an iPhone if you were one of the first adopters like we were.
Yeah, and then 2 months later, they dropped it by $200 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then got rid of the 4-gig model, and yeah. Hey, good times.
It's good times. I still enjoyed it.
I'm still glad I had my original iPhone.
I wish I had.
It was a game changer.
I don't know. I think everybody's going to be going away from the subsidized phone contract thing.
Well, the United States, I think, is one of the last holdouts for subsidized contracts.
Yeah. I think it's a better way to go. So
I'm fine
with it. I would expect once AT&T does it, then even Verizon, if they have it, they'll probably follow suit at some point.
Yeah. So continuing on that line, T-Mobile disputes the YouTube throttling accusations with some spin. They basically said that, let's see here.
Put a spin on it.
Oh, where is it? Where's the quote?
If you'd like to, you should have put a spin on it.
So YouTube said T-Mobile is effectively throttling or degrading its traffic. Reducing data charges can be good for users, but it doesn't justify... Okay, no, that's not the right quote. Here we go. Using the term throttle is misleading, a representative tells me in an email. We aren't slowing down YouTube or any other site. In fact, because video is optimized for mobile devices, streaming from the sites should be just as fast, if not faster, than before. A better phrase is mobile optimized, or a less flattering downgraded, or is also
downgraded
accurate.
Quality is what YouTube is having an issue with, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's totally what they're doing.
And they're trying to spin this out of, yeah. And they, it, so, and,
but
and
only we, as we talked last time, only at the request of the customer.
No. And
right?
So Jeff, you
no.
said
Did
you
it come out later. That they're doing it regardless?
Yeah, they're doing it regardless.
So with binge on, off, or on.
Binge on, binge off.
Yeah, that's wrong.
And it and there are a lot of people saying, oh, I wish it was opt-in. I don't know if it really matters if it's opt-in. I think most people don't
it
really care.
It could be
care.
Opt-out. That would be fine, too. But
it is opt-out.
Just
Well, it's supposed
well,
to be opt-out.
Really.
It seems like it would be opt-out, but it's not.
Right. It needs to be really opt-in or really opt-out.
But you've, yeah, I mean, you've had many other. People test this out. I want to be clear on this because I haven't tested this before. Jeff. You know for a fact that even if you turn off binge on, YouTube is still crappy.
I have.
Is it crappy? Does it really look crappy? That's the other thing that comes into
see,
play.
I don't know if it looks crappy. What I know is that many people that are intelligent enough to be able to talk about this without screwing it up have said that that it's still compressed.
Okay, I'm going to play with it and make sure.
Okay,
but yeah, it seems. I mean, if there's so much stink being raised about this, then it seems like that is part of the issue.
Well, and so is the allegation that T-Mobile is doing it because they want to keep their costs down, I would assume. Their own bandwidth costs on their network.
Which
and
makes
people
sense.
People watch
because,
a lot of YouTube on their mobile devices, right?
Yeah.
So they probably and crunched the numbers, looked at the analysis, and went, holy geez, look how much YouTube our network is running. If we can cut that in half or by a third, we're going to save a crud ton of money.
You know, the thing that I'm finding really surprising is that people are looking at this like, holy crap, this is crazy. I can't believe someone's doing this. This is not new. I remember a few years ago people flipping over Verizon doing the same thing.
Yeah. Right?
Well, again, I think the problem I would have with it is if for some reason I wanted, you know, 1080p YouTube videos on my iPhone, and I very rarely ever do. But if for some reason I did, and I flipped that switch, and I said, okay, I want the 1080p, and I was only getting delivered 720p, then that's not cool.
Right.
Like, if I say, yes, I want the higher quality, I'm willing to pay the bandwidth charges, I'm willing to... That should be in control of YouTube and the end user, and the delivery company in the middle that's delivering the bandwidth shouldn't get a choice. Like, they shouldn't be in control of that. That's the thing. So it'd be like your electric company deciding, oh, I'm going to flip the switch in my living room. I want it at 100%. And they're like, no, you can have it at 50%.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the whole right. idea behind net neutrality, right?
Right. It costs us too much. If you're all going to run your lights at 100%, we know you don't need that much light anyway because your room's not that big. So we're going to decide that you only need 50% and you'll be fine. 50% brightness is okay. Right? You know, no one would accept that from the electric company. So you shouldn't have to take that from your
separate. Unless you're part of a rural electric association.
But again, and if you opt
in
for
that. They actually do stuff like that. Not that low, but yeah, they'll lower the power they're pumping through the lines.
Yeah, I mean, it's different. It's different if my electric company comes to me and says, look, we analyzed your room, and look, honestly, if you run your lights at 50%, we're going to save money. You're going to have a better experience. And it's going to be just as bright as when you're at 100%. You're not going to notice the difference. And then I look at it and I go, oh, yeah, you're right. You know, that's cool. Go ahead. I'll let you do that. That's different than me not having the option. I guess that's exactly how I see it.
Yeah. So. Yes. Customers should be able to make an informed decision.
Yep. And they've taken that choice away. So I'm kind of on the side of YouTube on this one, if what they're doing is actually not honoring the whole binge on, binge off sort of switches. If they're just deciding, oh, look, you only get to stream at this bit rate, even if you want higher bit rate, because we know what's better for you than you do. No, forget it. You're a utility. I'm paying you, and if I want to pay for the extra bandwidth, then that's my prerogative, right?
Yeah. Totally.
I agree.
The entire time since I said I'm going to try this, mm-hmm. I've been looking for a way to turn it off. And I still have not found it.
That's not reassuring.
Turn off binge on.
Yeah.
Probably have to do it through the account page on the website.
Yeah, I'm doing it. I'm there.
Oh.
I've been clicking and clicking. All kinds of buttons.
Yeah.
I know I saw it earlier today. I don't know what the...
Cell companies are awesome. Like we were talking earlier about, you know, trying to find, like, prices of AT&T plans on AT&T's website.
Yeah.
Like the thing that everybody would want to do, right? How much are your plans? Good luck.
That's so stupid.
Yeah. Well, at least T-Mobile is very upfront about that.
Just sign up. We will send you a bill and then you'll know.
Just sign up. You'll know later. Okay, it's under.
Don't worry
if you
about
click,
it.
Yeah, if you have to ask, you shouldn't have a phone.
Profile, so in your T-Mobile account, profile, and then you click on media settings, and then binge on, turn it off. And now it's going to probably tell me about how I shouldn't turn it off. Oh no, it just worked. Cool. So yeah.
Now you can test some YouTube videos. And
I can test some YouTube videos. Yeah. Apple has filed trademarks for Beats 2, 3, 4, and 5 radio stations.
No surprise.
No surprise. And I'm happy for it. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's a good thing. Obviously, they're ripping off the BBC, but that's fine. I'll take it. Because the BBC does a good thing. And
how are they ripping off the BBC?
It's BBC Radio 1, Radio 2, et cetera. That's, I mean.
Oh, okay.
Just all the right. naming
copying,
idea.
Not ripping off.
Okay, yeah, they're copying. But I'm looking forward to it because obviously not everybody enjoys the... You know, the top 100 or whatever. I guess it's not even top 100 on Beats. They have a pretty good variety. Although I think that this will probably allow them to diversify the sorts of things and concentrate certain genres on certain channels.
Well, and just because they did the trademarks doesn't mean that they're going to do any additional stations. I think it's really going to be dependent upon the success of Beats 1. And that's not even proven yet. I'm curious to hear. I mean, Apple hasn't made any statements about, you know, is Beats 1 really popular? I've listened a couple times, but to be honest, and I threw this out on my show, and I'd be curious to know from people in the iOS show audience, is anybody who's using or
like actively
to Beats 1 on a regular basis? I maybe once or twice a month will jump in there, and there's a couple shows that I like, particularly St. Vincent's mixtape. If you haven't heard that, it's a good one.
Hmm.
basically they have a listener. She has somebody who will email in and has a story, and they do a series, a mixtape based on a theme, based on that person's story, and she'll have them on and interview them and talk to them about.
That's cool.
You know, what their deal is, and then she picks songs to go along with sort of their life or what's happening in their life at the time.
It's yeah.
Really interesting show.
That sounds cool. I think part of the issue for me is that it's too much of a toss up for me to consistently go back, I think, because it is so eclectic, and I would prefer to have a little bit more of an idea of what I'm getting myself into. You know, if I'm
but
in
we,
the
you've
for,
got, I mean, we've become a playlist society. That's why I'm curious to find out, is Beats One really working, or are people just way beyond the whole radio concept anymore? You know, is it because we have on-demand streaming, does anybody really want to bother with, because the problem, and again, it does, you don't have this problem with Beats One, and I think maybe Apple needs to do some marketing, because people think Beats One, you flip it on and it's like what it's ever on at the time, right? Because it's a radio, it works like a radio station, and so I press play and what's ever playing is what I get to hear. But they do make all that content available on demand as well. It's not that hard to, it's not easy to find, but you can get at it.
They do?
Yeah. So you can find that. Your shows that you like, and that's what I've been doing. And that's mostly the way I use it, but it's still kind of difficult. And I don't know if they have the full back catalog all the time. I've had issues where I can see that a new show aired, and then I have a hard time finding it. Sometimes you can find it through Connect. But I think Apple needs to do a better job with that part of it.
They have,
yes.
There are a lot of issues with, I mean, this can be the weekly iTunes bitch show.
But I mean, there's good stuff there. So I'm really curious to find out. So getting back to the story about new stations, my point is, for them to do new stations, they're going to have to show internally, I think, that Beats One is really working. And I don't know that they're at that point yet. What we do know in what's kind of cool about these trademarks is that Apple has the licensing that they need.
Yes.
With
yeah.
the record labels to do up to 5 stations. Anyway.
So they can do it.
Yeah. Without having to pay extra licensing fees. So they have access to the content. It's going to be more a matter of, is there any value in Apple doing, because in doing additional stations, that means more DJs, more producers, more, I mean, there's a lot of cost going into, you know, building out 5 stations on the network. And they've already spent a lot just on Beats One. So it's going to have to prove itself before I think they're going to expand.
It's such a pain in the ass to figure it out, though. I still have no idea to make this. Like, I want to see what they've played.
Not if you just take the radio, the traditional radio model, but that goes to my earlier point. I think a lot of people are beyond that now. Like,
right.
Nobody
yeah,
just
I'm
wants
not interested
to press
in
play and hear. Yeah. So I listen mostly during the day. And the reason I don't listen to Beats One mostly is because they are playing, you know, a bunch of R&B top 40 hip hop stuff. And I'm just not into that, you know. So if I just hit play on Beats One, I may or may not get something that I'm interested in. And then I flip over and I'm like, well, shoot, if I go to the radio tab or the playlist tab in Apple Music or any of these other places, there's a ton of stuff that I can listen to.
Yeah, I spend most of my time in the radio tab and in the For Me tab.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I use the playlists too, both the curated, Apple curated playlists and
the third-party ones. I use those too, yeah.
Oh, I just found, this is crazy. Yeah, see this, it's such a mess.
There's some really good EDM stuff in there.
Yeah. Oh, I just found one of the shows. So I went to, when I was reading about this today, I turned on Beats One and I'm like, oh, this is great. It's a Major Lazer show, a 3-hour long thing that they're doing right now. And I was really enjoying it. And until you said that they have back catalog of this stuff, I didn't realize it. And it was really difficult to figure it out and to figure out where it was.
Yeah, so they need to fix that.
I had
they
to search to. For the artist, and then I found...
I'm not entirely convinced, though, that that's not by design either. Because I don't know how their streaming contract rates and things work out.
So they want to obscure it?
Well, yeah, because that limits the amount of playback they're getting on streams, which would reduce their costs. So again, I think there's a lot of factors that go into this in terms of, are they going to do additional stations? you know, they got to be making some money off of it in some way, whether that's selling more iTunes Music or Apple Music subscriptions, or whether that's selling more hardware, or whether that's the advertising is working. You know, who knows? But so as cool as it is that they've got trademarks for all these other stations, I wouldn't expect any additional stations anytime soon. I'd be surprised if we saw, you know, like Beats 2 even this year.
Oh, yeah, it is 2016, isn't it?
Yeah. Happy New Year. I'd like to see at least one more station this year.
I would, too.
But again, I think they're still finding their way with Beats 1. So I'd rather them figure out Beats 1 in a really good way first and then start expanding.
All right. How about if I reword what I said? I hope Apple figures out Beats 1 so right. that we can get a second station this year.
There you go.
I like that, too.
You know what I'm saying? Because like Beats 1 yeah. still isn't even a thing in my mind yet.
No, it's not.
Point.
Yeah. So let us know if you're one of those people who actually regularly turns it on.
Yeah, regularly. I'm not talking about you've played around with it and you like it, because I think a lot of us do. I'm talking about who are the people out there that's like, oh, this is the way I listen to Apple Music. Like, this is what I signed up for Apple Music for.
Or at least one major component.
Right.
Let's see. Apple activated a whole bunch of iPhones during Christmas week.
Yep.
Well, that's a shocker.
It is a shocker. According to Flurry, they think that 49.1% of new device activations were Apple devices. 19.8% is number two, and that is Samsung.
Yeah, but they lost 2%, I think, or 2 or 3% to Samsung year over year.
Was it?
Yep.
Yeah, I think it was.
They were 51% last year.
Well, stuff happens, I guess.
Well, and the market's still growing fast enough that Apple could be way up year over year, but their overall market percentage could still drop.
Yeah, I'm not trying to bring people down either. It's just important to note, while the number sounds great and Apple's still in the majority, you know, people are looking at other devices, and you know, Samsung was up year over year, where Apple was down.
Yeah, and phablets are up this year, according to them. That's what they're calling it.
Oh, I hate that word.
Yep.
Last year, 13%. This year, 27.
People like the big phones, but and Apple's, you know, Apple's about to like turn out if people like the smaller ones too, right?
Yeah.
So they say.
Yeah, let's talk about that. So, where's the thing? Yeah, iPhone 6C.
6C.
Which, you know, we could argue all day about how they should tighten up this naming scheme. But according to Chinese website My Drivers, it will have
more than just that. There's a lot of people that are parroting this,
yes,
this story.
1642 milliamp hour battery, which is larger than the iPhone 5S's 1570.
Slightly larger. Yeah.
Slightly larger. 2 gigabytes of RAM, which is very nice.
A9 processor.
A9
it's not going to be a
processor. Touch ID.
No 3D touch, so don't get excited.
Well, yeah. And then the same curved glass as used on the iPhone 6.
Yeah, it's going to look like a 4-inch 6S.
That sounds nice.
Yeah,
I know
really
quite
nice,
a few people
gonna
who are
going to have 2 gigs of RAM and
that.
An A9 and great screen, and it's going to be, you know, at the same price point as the 5S, and a lot of people are going to buy them. Colors too.
So is next year's going to be the iPhone 6S or 6CS or
no, 6E 7C?
So it's just going to be the
7C.
Yeah,
I think they'll do one every 2 years, you know, every 2 years instead of every year. How it'll work with the C line.
Yeah, there are going to be people who are upset about that.
Yeah, but that probably keeps down production costs.
Yeah. There is no, I mean, because look, the current one that they're selling is the 5S, right? So that's already two gens back, and they're going to replace it with a 6C. So now you just have 2 years of the, you know, that that's the bottom of the line phone.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be updated every year. And there, and on, so the people who like that model, the advice I would give them is buy it the year that it comes out. Because most people keep their phones for 2 years anyway, especially people who are buying the lower price, you know, quote unquote free phone or the cheap phone. They're not getting a new phone every year anyway, so it doesn't matter.
I think that's actually excellent advice.
Yeah, so if that's your phone of choice, make sure you buy it the year it comes out. You're going to get an A9. You're going to get the latest processor, the most amount of RAM. I mean, the specs are basically lining up with the 6S. It's just a smaller model minus 3D Touch, which I think is the right thing to do, right?
Yeah.
So you have one keystone feature that, hey, if you want that, you got to buy the latest, you got to buy the premium model. If you want to save some dough and are okay with a little smaller phone, here's an option for you. But it's not going to be a slouchy phone. We're not making you compromise in a bunch of ways.
Yeah, that sounds nice. I like
that. I think it's a nice thing to do for consumers, mm-hmm. and they just won't update it as frequently. So if you buy it in a year from now, it's going to be kind of the prior gen phone, but that's what they've always done anyway. And you'll still have the 6S and 6S Plus as an option when the 7 comes out as well, I'm sure. So you're going to have choices.
Yeah. iPhone 7 rumors. Looks like, so from the Commercial Times, it's going to have it's going to be waterproof.
We've awesome. Heard that before.
We've heard that before. The iPhone 6S is almost waterproof.
More waterproof.
It's more water
resistant than there any other model has been.
You can dunk it probably in your toilet and it'll be fine. But don't do that because that's gross.
Don't do that.
But probably like when I accidentally jumped in the pool with my phone that one time and then realized, you know, 30 seconds later, it wouldn't have been dead like my 5S was.
Oh, it was dead, huh?
Yeah, that is a kiss of death for... Oof.
You could have held a seance. It might have come back.
Well, I had AppleCare Plus, so I paid
that's the next best thing to a seance.
I paid my fee and got a new phone.
There you go.
And then handed it down to my wife like a week later.
Yeah,
because I got a new one.
That's how those things happen, though.
So she got basically a brand new phone, so she was stoked.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. So in addition to the improved water resistance, they also believe that they will be using new, quote, new compound materials that would be put in place to form a discrete housing for the antenna. So we would not have the antenna
Yay,
bands.
Yay, no more antenna lines.
Yeah, that would be
I've
nice.
Gotten used to that design thing, but I still hate it. I still think it's ugly.
Same. Yeah. It's going to be, can it not be thinner? I don't want it to be thinner. We don't need it to be thinner.
Well, the only other thing I'm worried about with the composite material thing is they don't say what it's going to be, but a lot of the rumors have been pointing to that it's not going to be metal.
I hope that's not the case. I really like the metal back.
It feels premium. Are they going to go to plastic? I know in the past they played around with like ceramic.
Well, the last time they used plastics for the mainline phone, we ended up with cracks around the the headphone jacks and then around the mute port or mute switch.
Yeah, I would say plastic is the second best material before metal. Because metal is a lot more ductile, so if you drop it, you get a little ding, and that's fine. With plastic, you have crack propagation, like you had with the 3G.
Yeah, but I mean,
but with if you do a ceramic, then you also have issues of cracking. It's not ductile at all. It has it doesn't flex very well.
Well, Apple's played around. I mean, there's very advanced kinds of ceramic, or again, compound. Ceramic materials and things that I've read about that Apple is rumored to have been playing around with for
sure.
probably the past 10
but
years.
But you may end up, I mean, if you get to something that has the same qualities that you want out of a metal that also incorporates some kind of interesting exotic compound composite, mm-hmm. you know, you may end up, it may be too expensive, too cost prohibitive for them to
do
that.
Radio transparency seems to be what they're going for, right?
Yeah, well, you need radio transparency and you need it to hold up to being dropped.
Right. And in many cases, those don't fit together well.
Yeah, it's a tall order. Whatever happened to liquid metal? I thought we were supposed to all have liquid metal phones.
Liquid metal is too hard still for them to
produce. I know the answer. It was a rhetorical question.
Okay. Yeah. Well, just for
it's
people.
Like, it's like me saying, where are the flying cars?
Yeah. Yeah. I have one of those liquid metal SIM ejector tools.
I'm so bummed.
It was really cool for me to figure out which one was which, because they say, you know, you really don't know unless you compare two and one of them is slightly darker. And if you try to bend it, it's not going to bend. And I was pretty reluctant to do that, but it was very easy to figure out between the two of them which one was liquid metal. But yeah, it's difficult to do something like that. But and there's still the rumor that
colors. I want to know about the colors. What do you guys think about the colors?
I want
for the 6C.
White metal.
You know, there was a time when I would have said no, Apple's not going to do colors. But
for the C or for the 7?
For the C.
Okay.
But are they going to go to the standard? Are they going to go gold, silver, space gray, or are they going to do colors like they've always done?
My guess is brighter colors.
They're going to do colors.
What's interesting is the rumors are saying only two or three colors, though.
All right, so maybe it's
You would think if it was two, it would be black and white, right? Like the classic, we have black and we have white.
Yeah, but if they're going to do three other colors, my guess is it'll be like yellow and red and blue or something like that.
Yeah, whatever the most popular.
Yeah, I'm guessing that's my same theory is I think it's going to be an anodized aluminum color sort of thing. Like it's done with iPods in the past and some sort of brightish, but, you know, the classic colors that they do. I hope they do bright ones. I always like it when they do the brights versus the pastel-y kind of things. But brights are hard to do in anodized aluminum, though. And everything's been pointing to that it is going to be a metal instead of a plastic case.
I like the current line of the iPod Touch. And they do have a gold and a silver in that lineup, in addition to a nice pink and a nice blue.
Up the Touch, can we do a quick aside thing? Because I got an email from a listener who got an iPod Touch over the holidays.
Oh.
And just asked me to comment and mention that, you know, it's a device that doesn't get a lot of love or attention anymore. But
yeah.
It's still a pretty killer device.
It is.
Yes.
Well, I think that probably a lot of the reason it doesn't get a lot of attention is because there's no tab for it anymore on Apple's website, and it's very difficult to find.
Right. But, I mean, if you're looking especially for like a kid or somebody who's not ready for a phone yet, but they want to be able to run all the apps and games and...
Uh-huh.
You know, still, I mean, it's got the great cameras in it.
It's
still,
light. It's slim.
Yeah. No
powerful.
Contract, you know,
does a lot of fun stuff. Yeah.
Still a little pricey.
It's an 8 chip.
A little bit cheaper.
That you can get refurb. Nice, yeah. $200 for a 16 gig. It's a little pricey.
Yeah. You'd think they could bring the price down at this point, but maybe just because they're not selling that many.
Maybe if they made it easier for people to find, they'd sell more.
Anyway, but still a good option that I think people don't often think about. So remember, there's still iPod Touches around. This PSA brought to you by Adam's email.
Thank you. Let's see here. What else do we have? Oh, Apple is close to OLED screen deal with... Samsung and LG, but it won't be for the iPhone 7. It'll be for an iPhone in 2018, for the iPhone 8.
Man, the OLED thing, that's like a unicorn for the iPhone.
Well,
it's come up so many times.
I've never understood why it's needed other than is it just the energy efficiency? I mean, is that...
I think it's probably energy efficiency, which is obviously a very nice thing. I think you can get certainly better... picture quality out of it. And
really though, is that a real thing?
At this point, Apple has for years
until recently, that is, they would always top the DisplayMate tests, and until the like last year or so, that was not the case. So is it the case where OLED is sort of at this point surpassed the IPS that Apple uses? And like, have we finally had that crossover?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
So I'd like to do a little more research before before we say OLED is just better. Because I'm not convinced that it's there yet. But it could be. Again, like I said, DisplayMate just, it was either this year or past year and a half where they didn't rate the iPhone's display as the top display. From what I remember. Anybody can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that happened this year.
Yeah, don't know. Sorry.
And there's like this new micro OLED thing, and there's also some other factory in, like, was it Taiwan that Apple bought? It was doing something weird with display technology that Qualcomm was working on.
Oh, right.
Guess, remember that story? It doesn't seem like it's a viable technology, and it doesn't seem like Apple's going to use it for that, but a lot of the equipment in there, I guess, could be used for developing new display technologies. So the theory was, is Apple's going to be running this lab to kind of figure out better OLED kind of technologies and things like that. But Qualcomm had one that was almost like a, more like an e-ink technology, so you only needed power applied to change the pixels on the screen, but it was a full, like, color, full saturated display.
Not like a Pebble display.
No. Although I think they were saying that still didn't have the brightness yet of a, you know, of like current OLED or IPS technology. So that was sort of where they were pushing it. But it was better than what was happening with e-ink displays.
Hmm.
I forget what Qualcomm had a brand name for it too. I can't remember what it was called. But they were using it in, smart devices and bracelets and like smartwatches and things like that. It's the original intent.
Yeah. We'll have to see. I want to
scale up at some point then.
I want to get some fun displays in the, I guess, iPhone 8 2018. Whatever.
Mirasol is the technology that Qualcomm was developing. By the way.
Mirasol?
Mirasol. It's called.
Huh. I know Adam will like this one. Class action lawsuit.
Woo.
Accusing Apple of crippling the iPhone 4S with iOS 9.
Please.
Yeah, this is hilarious. I don't care about lawsuits at all.
People
who don't know this show know the irony or whatever that was in that statement.
Right, yeah. I agree with this lawsuit. I hope that Apple is...
I think it's flat out crap.
Forced to change some ways that it operates. Yeah.
Seriously?
It is absolute BS. If you talk to the average person on the street who has an iPhone that is a couple years old, they are extremely upset. Talk to your wife about this. I'm sure that's half of the reason why she doesn't want you to update her phone, because she can't go back.
She's never complained.
No, we've talked about how she doesn't want you to update her stuff.
That's she only just because, doesn't want him to touch her stuff.
Okay, that may be.
That,
okay.
The only reason for that is because Apple moves things around and not because it gets slow or broken.
Okay.
It's because it now looks different and doesn't work the same way that she's used to it working. And that makes her angry.
Well, I know that my lady is very upset that her iPad mini is almost completely unusable. And it was really great before when it was running earlier versions of iOS.
It's interesting. My kids have original iPad minis and they have not.
I have a first gen iPad mini and it's not as fast as my iPhone 6S, but it's still totally usable.
Well, I mean, for what it's worth, I talk to a lot of people about this issue casually, and they have always said, oh yeah, of course, they force you to update so it gets crappier, and then you're forced to buy a new phone.
No, that's a load of crap. What's happening is Apple is finding a way to keep devices in the upgrade cycle longer than any other company would.
Yeah, okay, so that's one way of looking at it.
Is Apple's not calling the cutoff point hard.
Yeah, but if they had cut off the iPhone 6 or 4S from iOS 9, the class action lawsuit would have been because Apple artificially blocked them from being able to run the OS.
They're forcing them to upgrade.
Yeah, so Apple's screwed. It doesn't matter if they if they let you install the OS or not, people are going to be pissed off.
I don't think that... No, I...
they are not intentionally putting stuff into play to make it slow.
No. Okay. So their, I mean, their motivation is to, their motivation is to have a giant swath of devices that are all running the most current operating system.
So they do the best that they can to make that possible.
But the fact that they force you, they annoy the hell out of you to update.
Now, you just said two things that are not the same.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what this lawsuit is, right?
No. I wasn't finished. I wasn't finished with my thought. I wasn't going to say that they force you to update. I was going to say that they force you to stay where you are. You can't downgrade.
Right.
They force that upon you. They force you to stay where you are.
Once you've upgraded.
Once you've upgraded.
Made the mistake of upgrading and realized,
so you can't feel it out realistically as a consumer. You can't feel it out and change your mind. And of course, there are the windows, the signing windows
so
that kind of get tapered off. That's not, it's beyond annoying, I think. And they do annoy the hell out of you to update.
But let me ask you this, getting back to the lawsuit. Is the lawsuit, you need to allow us to downgrade?
That is part of it, yes.
No.
I believe, I thought I saw that in there. That they, that part of it is that they are not allowed to downgrade.
Yeah, that is in the lawsuit that once you upgrade, you can't downgrade. But the lawsuit does not say, or the lawsuit is not targeting Apple specifically for that. It's used to back up the actual argument they're making, or complaint they're making, which is that Apple is artificially making devices obsolete.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a tough claim to prove.
And I don't think Apple's doing that at all.
I think that the claim would be if it was that Apple has interests that are outside of what is best for the consumer, that is better for their bottom line in terms of, and actually that's vague enough to back up what they're saying in addition to the whole idea of them wanting to have a huge product base is running the most current operating system. I think that would hit both of those
points. That's vague enough that the argument actually becomes, should Apple release new products and make money, or should they just keep releasing the same thing?
So here's the deal on this. Fine, I get that these people are upset. I get that it's annoying that you can't downgrade. I get all of this stuff.
And that your phone works like crap after you update to something, which the other part of it, which
then
is interesting that they bring up, is
to update, right, before you do some research.
But the
you go buy an Android phone. Or the point is, these people have taken to filing a lawsuit as the solution.
What else is their solution?
Their solution is Apple is a private company. It can run its business however it wants to run its business. They are not violated in any way. They can go buy a different device. They don't have to buy an Apple device if they don't like the way Apple runs their business. They are not damaged. The whole point of a lawsuit is they have been somehow damaged, and what they have to prove is that they have been damaged.
And that Apple intentionally damaged them.
Yes. So they're not going to win the lawsuit, first of all. So it's just a way to annoy Apple because they are annoyed.
Well, I wish that it was possible to downgrade because it is a pain in the ass constantly.
Well, sure, but everybody should be hammering feedback at apple.com and sending emails to Tim Cook every day.
Yeah, that would be good too. And now, as far as
writing campaign, I don't know, but I mean, as far as I guess people feel that filing a lawsuit or a class action is going to get their attention.
Well, that is the way to do it.
Really not.
I mean, that is what you do in America. I'm not happy about it, but that is what you do.
Sadly, that is correct.
But I mean, and so I think the other thing that is probably very frustrating to these people, another reason why they resort to a lawsuit, is because I'm being flippant about saying go to Android. I get that people who are iPhone users generally don't want to go to Android. And the thing is if you go to Android, you're going to have the exact opposite problem. You're going to have a phone that will run the latest operating system, and you're not allowed to upgrade because it hasn't been certified by your carrier and it takes 9 months.
Or you buy a brand new device that's running a 3-year-old version of Android and you still can't upgrade.
Right. Yeah, these sorts of things.
Yeah, so the one thing that I think is even worse, and I don't have a whole lot of experience with it, but I know that people have the issue is devices that can't run the most recent operating system. So maybe take an iPhone 4. So they have either decided I'm not going to upgrade because it will make my performance go down the toilet, or they just can't. However, right. apps that they were able to use previously do not work any longer.
Back up your apps, folks.
Well, the thing is, I thought Apple had this solved.
Well, they do.
They have the claims that your device should download the most recent app version that runs on your device, but for some reason it just doesn't always work out that way.
Because developers are in control. So the developers can decide to pull a version of an app from the App Store. So if you go to re-download it, even if you're on an older device, if they've pulled the version that was supported on your device off the App Store, you can't get it.
I just don't understand.
But that's
the motivation.
That's not on Apple. Apple has the mechanisms within the system for them to leave those in place.
Okay. I just don't understand Apple's motivation to keep people from downgrading. If someone wants to go out of their way to downgrade, I feel like they should be able to do that.
Well, yeah. I mean, this goes in line with people should be able to jailbreak.
No, I don't think that's as big of a deal. You know, we've been able to on Mac OS X for years, you get security updates, which, you know, it's not a necessity for Apple to allow downgrades and then also support them with security updates. But, you know,
I see where you're coming from.
It's annoying.
They could easily allow downgrading. Why they don't do it is somewhat of a mystery.
It's very mysterious. It's been one of the biggest mysteries
of
iOS.
I'm with you on that,
since,
but again, I don't think a class action lawsuit against Apple is the way to solve that problem.
Yeah, but then, you know, what is the way to solve it is the question. And I guess the only way is to bitch at Tim at Apple.com.
Or just realize that Apple gets to run their business the way they want to run their business, and this is how they've chosen to do it, and you don't have much control.
Except for to tell them how you feel.
Yeah. You can tell them how you feel all day long, but again, they're probably not going to listen.
Yeah. Kevin Lynch.
That's positive, right?
Yeah, you're such a nice guy, Adam. Kevin Lynch says that the Apple Watch is super good at ticking down seconds accurately.
Yes.
Well, that's great.
He said a lot of things that kind of went in my eyeballs and then out the hole in the back of my head that forgets things. And
The forget hole.
Yeah. I need to patch that up. But basically he was saying that there's a lot of science-y things that happen. There's actually a special component in the Apple Watch that keeps it from drifting time due to temperature variations, which is actually pretty cool.
That's how you can do the Mickey effect, right?
Yeah. That's exactly what he was talking about. If you line up a bunch of phones, they will all, or watches rather, they will all be ticking imperceptibly at the same time.
Yeah, the coolest way to test that is get a bunch of people who all have Apple Watches together and have everybody flip on the, you know, and that have come from different places, different time zones, different areas and things like that. Have them all flip over to the Mickey Mouse face and then watch Mickey Mouse tap his foot. And they'll all be in perfect sync.
I wonder if that's ever happened.
Of course it has.
I've done it.
Okay. You've done it. I don't know if enough people.
Two or three watches? Yeah, I've never seen it. Like, it'd be cool if we still had Macworld to get like 20 of them.
There you go. That's where it would happen. That's where it would go down. Maybe is Barry having, well, I guess it's not Barry's event. But
Macstock, yeah. I'm going this year for sure.
Yeah, you could do Macstock.
But that is Mike. Shoot, what's Mike's from... for your Mac guys only, Mike, I can't remember his last name now. Unfortunately, I apologize. That's his conference, macstock.com, I think it is.
Yeah.
People want to check it out. It's in Chicago in July.
Yeah. So check that out. But yeah, there's a crystal.
Oh, it's not macstock.com. Darn it. I'll get the URL before the end of the
show. Okay, cool. But yeah, there's a crystal in there that makes it, super accurate. It doesn't drift a lot. So it's more accurate than your phone, even though it gets the time information from your phone. It uses lots of technology so that you know exactly when it was the new year. And that's why they
So, what you're saying is when your watch asks your iPhone, hey, what time is it? And your iPhone tells it, your watch replies back, yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's cool.
Mm-hmm. So with that,
MacStockConferenceAndExpo.com.
There you go.
It's in July 15th and 16th in the Chicago area.
What were the dates?
It's actually in Woodstock, New York, I want to say. No, not New York. Woodstock.
Chicago, Illinois.
Yeah, there you go.
I've been there. It's the middle of nowhere.
Yes, sir.
What were the dates? I could pull it up, but I didn't.
The 15th and 16th of July.
Okay. Maybe I'll go. We'll see what happens.
In Crystal Lake, Illinois.
Oh, Crystal Lake. That's much better.
Okay.
Okay. So, picks. Jeff, do you have one?
I do. I'm actually going kind of old school-ish, and only because I'm totally on a Star Wars kick right now.
Cool.
And it's the Lego Star Wars game for the iPad. So it's Lego Star Wars. I think it's called Lego Star Wars: The Complete Series or Complete Saga, and it's like all of the six movies prior to Star Wars: The Force Awakens coming out, and they're Lego, and it's always fun, and it's my speed of game because you don't permanently die, and you have enough in the game. Just right out the chute, so that you don't have to do a lot of or any in-app purchases to actually win.
Neat.
Yeah. I mean, they do have in-app purchases, and that's fine because it's just stuff to add on, not to actually complete the game.
Gotcha.
And it's just fun. I mean, the Lego games are just fun.
I have not played any of them.
Oh, well, you're missing out. You should do Lego Star Wars and Lego Batman.
Cool. Good to know.
Yeah, they're good. They're good games.
Adam.
I'm doing a quick search to see if I had picked this. Hopefully I didn't pick this already.
Okay.
We were talking about programming and Arduinos and stuff pre-show.
Oh, yeah.
Raspberry Pis and all that fun stuff. People who listen to the show or my show also know that I am a big fan of Sphero products.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, so the Sphero Spark or the Sphero 2.0 or the Sphero Ollie or the new BB-8 Sphero, keeping on the Star Wars theme.
How many Spheros do you have?
I have an original Sphero, I have a Sphero Spark, I have a Sphero Ollie, and I have a Sphero BB-8.
Holy crap.
You have an armada.
Yeah.
Well, so here's the cool thing about my pick. So there is an app for teaching kids how to code, both iOS devices and, or it's for teaching kids how to code, but this runs on iOS and it's called Tickle, T-I-C-K-L-E.
I love this app. Love it.
And what's cool about it is, it's kind of one of these, I call them nodal programming apps, or if you've ever used, I'm going to blank on the thing. It's the one with Scratch.
Oh, yeah.
You know, where it's this visual programming where you're given little blocks, and you have blocks that represent, you know, controls. You have blocks that represent events. You have blocks that represent logic loops and variables and operators and things like that. And you drag these blocks out and then you can adjust variables within them and sort of build out a program visually. So it's a great way for kids to learn the basics of, you know, how the structure of a program and start to learn about things like variables and for loops and all these sorts of things. So it's that style of coding. But what's awesome about it is that it also gives you, a bunch of sprites, so little animated characters that you can pull out on the screen. And then you can build the programming blocks around those to control them. But because it's on iOS, you have access to all of the iOS input and events and things like that and the sensors. So you can activate, like if I do a touch point, move the character to the touch point. You can build these kinds of programs where if I tilt the iPad, move the sprite, you know, in the direction that I'm tilting the iPad. That in and of itself is like cool, right?
Yeah.
So you can start building little games and iOS programs right with this little visual editor. And it's a great way for kids to get excited. But on top of that, they've built it and it has integration with real world devices. So, for example, the Sphero, kids can write a program where they could have the iPad, and when they tilt it, it controls the Sphero. Or they touch a certain point, a button that they programmed, and it changes the color of the Sphero. Or you can even get at the sensors in the physical objects. So when the Sphero, here's a cool one, like BB-8's rolling around, he collides into the wall, he turns red and you spin his head around, right? You can program stuff like that with this little app. And it has integration with Hue as well, like Hue bulbs. So you could write little programs for your Hue bulbs with it. They also work with some of the Parrot drones and the Arduino Bean, which is a little Arduino.
Neat.
So you can control LEDs and thermometer sensors and accelerometers. And
if you go back to the BB-8 thing, the BB-8 Sphero app is stunningly hobbled. I mean, it's cool, but it's very, very limited. So if you have a BB-8 and you actually want to do more than bounce it off walls, you need to have Tickle so you can really take control of all the sensors and lights and everything and make your BB-8 actually do more than just roam around your floor.
Yeah, so you can do sounds and stuff. So what's cool is you can build like an on-screen game or something like that that also interacts with physical objects. So you could have, you know, if you get your Sphero into a certain location, something else happens on screen, it triggers a new character to, you know, light up and appear. I mean, your imagination can run wild with it. It's just really, it's a cool little app, and it's totally free.
Yeah, that's nuts.
So if you have, whether you have, you know, these physical devices or not, it's still cool because you can have your kids programming like their own apps where, again, you could have build a very simple little ball maze where you're just making a little ball sprite roll around the screen and you're trying to get it from, you know, one corner of the screen to another. That's relatively easy to program with this. You know, all the way through, you could then mirror that to a Sphero and, you know, have it driving around the room in the same way. So it's just really cool. It's a cool little program, great way to get kids into code, and good even just for adults, just people who want to tinker. My only complaint is they don't let you get at any of the underlying code, although Sphero does have its own, if you're really into Sphero, they do have their own programs that'll let you program in like what's like a Sphero, forget what they call it, I think they call it Orb. It's kind of like a basic.
Yeah, except it doesn't work with BB-8.
Right.
And that's an artificial limitation.
So anyway, that's it. Tickle.
Nice. Man, that my pick is not nearly as cool as that. It's just a... So I went into the T-Mobile app today to figure out some Binge On stuff. And it was like, hey, you haven't rebooted your phone in like 28 days. You should do that.
Oh, really?
And first of all, it's kind of funny that they're like, hey, to ensure performance of your phone, you should reboot it. I think that's funny. But then
seems
it got,
wrong.
It totally seems wrong.
You shouldn't have to do that.
Well, that seems wrong, but it also seems wrong. It seemed wrong that it had been that long since I'd rebooted my phone.
You'd think it would have at least crashed.
I know.
Well, a crash isn't a reboot though, right?
Well, I honestly haven't had any crashes, but, I think it would just crash the springboard. But so it got me thinking, can't be right. I got to get something that'll tell me what my uptime is. So I grabbed this app called Smart System Info. It's free and it will tell you what your battery is, CPU, what amount of the CPU is being used, your uptime. For me, it's been 24 days, which is kind of crazy. RAM used and free, and then suddenly an ad. So just be aware of that.
Well, it's free.
It's free, yeah.
So it's not free. It's ad supported.
It's ad supported. Or you can give them some money and it gets rid of the ads. So that's nice. And used free.
Is this the one from Chupacabra Mobile?
I'm not sure. Let me see. It is Powell Bielecki. So no. But there may be better ones. I don't know. But this is the one that I grabbed. And it works. Smart System Info. There you go. It's free. So with that, you can find the iPhone picks and show notes at theiosshow.com. Review the show in iTunes and rate it. Click those little stars and tell a friend if you know somebody who would enjoy the show as well. Feedback at theiosshow.com is the email address to which you can send your feedback, questions, comments, all that stuff. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media, backbeatmedia.com. Adam Christensen is at the MacCast, MacCast.com, and at MacCast on Twitter. Thanks for being here and powering through.
Hey, thanks for having me. Happy New Year to everybody in our little community here, too. I just want to say that.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening and tuning in all every week.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have awesome Thank listeners.
You. And Jeff Gamet, he's at the Mac Observer, MacObserver.com. TMO Daily Observations. Check both of those out. And the TMO Daily Observations, of course, is the podcast that he does every day, except for Saturday and Sunday.
Right. And it's always awesome to be here. And I think it's really cool. This is the first show of the year for me.
Sweet. And at JGMan on Twitter. I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter. And with that, we'll see you next time on The iOS Show. An iPod. An iPod.
Internet. How are we going to communicate this? The stylus. We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus.